This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neal Conan is away. California is facing a budget crisis that could lead to the loss of thousands of state jobs and severe cutbacks in state services. Faced with a $38 billion deficit, state legislators have until midnight tonight to hammer out a new budget. But with Democrats insisting that taxes must be raised to solve the fiscal crisis and Republicans refusing to do so, no one holds out much hope that a solution will be found by tonight's deadline. The state's financial problems are being cited as one of the main reasons for a recall campaign against Democratic Governor Gray Davis, who was elected to a second term last November. The majority of funding for that campaign comes from a two-term Republican congressman from Vista, California, Darrell Issa, who wants to replace Davis as governor. So far, the campaign to recall Governor Davis has collected about 40% of the signatures needed to get the issue on the ballot. And with Davis's overall popularity at an all-time low, it's beginning to look more likely that the recall campaign could succeed. What are the reasons behind the recall campaign? What would an expensive recall election mean for a state that's already in debt? And just how did Governor Davis get into this situation in the first place? We'll be talking about the California recall campaign this hour, as well as how recall elections work in other states. We'll also talk with a mayor who recently survived a recall effort in her own town. We also want to hear from you. Have you participated in a recall effort in your community? And if you live in California, what's your reaction to the recall campaign against Governor Davis? Why are recalls necessary if we have elections? Give us a call at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from San Diego, California, is Republican Congressman Darrell Issa. Thanks for being on the program, Congressman Issa.
Well, thank you for having me on, Lynn.
You've spent over $1 million of your own money to recall Governor Davis. Why? What's behind this?
Well, several thousand contributors, averaging $29, have contributed some $600,000. So the money's coming from everywhere. But we have 1 million signatures of Californians. That's over 14% of the registration of California, who believe that the governor misled and outright lied to us as to the size of the deficit and the job situation in California in the last election. And that's why we have 11 laws to recall people who break the trust with the voters.
Are you at all concerned about the cost of a possible recall election given the fiscal crisis the state is in?
The governor raised the taxes on car tax alone by 140 times the cost of an election just a week ago. So this is very much a false statement by Gray Davis to somehow imply that these dollars are relatively large, when in fact they're very small compared to the size of our deficit, which is more like 1,000 times larger than the cost of an election.
Now, you don't just want to get rid of Gray Davis. You actually want his job as well. Is that right?
I want a governor who will give people the truth and make the tough decisions, hold down the spending so that, in fact, California doesn't become a third world state. If I'm the one that they choose, that's fine. But a recall election is, to a great extent, open to everyone. As a matter of fact, in California, it is more likely that a Democrat will win than a Republican will win statewide. So this isn't about one person's ambition. This is very much about the need for Gray Davis to go.
But it is, to some degree, about your own political ambitions if you're planning to run.
You know, you can't beat someone with no one. So I offered myself as a candidate so that people could begin to realize that not only would Gray go, but others may come. As of right now, I'm the only candidate, but I fully expect that on both sides of the aisle there will be other candidates. And I've said that all along, that my interest is Gray Davis going, whether I'm the best person to change the state back into a way in which we can support our UC system and all the other programs that are so important to California by building a tax base again rather than simply raising taxes. That's up to the voters.
Why didn't you or some of these other candidates who are now possibly expressing interest in running against him if the recall is successful, why didn't you run against him last November?
Lynn, these are Gray's lines, and I appreciate you giving them to me because it gives me the opportunity to say, with the $78 million that Gray spent, he got elected. That's fine. He also spent $11 million in the Republican primary painting Dick Reardon, a very moderate Republican, as a right-wing zealot, thus choosing who he was going to face in the general. So when it comes to using money and distorting elections, Gray's an expert at it. But the fact is that I wasn't in the last election. I supported Dick Reardon in the primary. But it isn't about when the last election was. It's about the false use of government power to falsely state the records we depend on in elections. You know, when Richard Nixon was impeached, he was impeached not for a break-in, but for using government to cover up a break-in. Gray Davis used the power of government to cover up a massive deficit and to cover up 290,000 jobs that were lost in California. He did this in his official capacity, and that's why we're recalling him.
Now, a bipartisan group of some civic leaders called on President Bush possibly to intervene to stop this recall. There's also forces against it are mounting their own campaign, although that, as I understand, will have no ultimate effect on whether this really gets on the ballot or not. But clearly there are some forces now gathering against it. Do you think that's ultimately going to affect your campaign to have a recall?
We have over a million Californians, nearly 15% of the registered voters in California, who have signed saying, let's get rid of the governor. And you have four individuals, two Republicans, two Democrats, who are calling on the governor, calling on the president, saying, you know, would you please intervene? Well, the president did not intervene to start this, and it is not a presidential matter. We are not asking the president, nor should we ask the president. This is a California matter, and people outside the state need to stay outside the state. This is purely a California matter for Californians to decide whether or not the trust has been so thoroughly shattered that we can no longer trust this governor to get us out of a hole that he helped dig.
All right. Well, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Anytime, Lynn.
Republican Congressman Daryl Issa spoke with us on the phone from San Diego. We did invite Governor Davis to speak with us today, but he had a scheduling conflict and had to decline the invitation. Joining us now from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, California, is Robert Saladay, a political reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. Thanks for being with us, Robert.
Thank you, Lynn.
Can you bring us up to date on just where things stand with the recall campaign right now?
Well, recall organizers say they're going to shut down their signature gathering on July 4th, which is just coming up, of course, and take a break, turn all the signatures in to the 58 counties, and see what happens. They're up against a pretty tight deadline under California law. If they want to force a special election this winter or this fall, they have to turn in most of the signatures by mid-July. Otherwise, the recall election gets flopped over to the March Democratic primary, or the March primary here in California, and that obviously would benefit Gray Davis quite a bit, because Democrats will be jazzed about the presidential election, and they'll be coming out much more than they would on a special election, which would probably just attract a lot of angry Republicans and people angry with Gray Davis.
Well, what are the chances of meeting that July deadline, first of all?
Well, this is kind of a strange situation, because petitions are not public information, so there's kind of a numbers game going on. There's probably some inflation of the numbers on the recall side and a lot of deflation of the numbers on the other side. But if the recall organizers are accurate, there's a pretty good chance that they will qualify for a special election. It's just then the situation moves to the counties, where you have to sort of verify the signatures, and that could be a complete mess, a la what happened in Florida during the presidential recount, where county by county, the various signatures are being held up depending on the political affiliation for each county. So it could get messy this summer.
Now, this $38 billion deficit the state is dealing with at this moment is not the only reason for this recall campaign, and I want to talk about some of the other ones. But first, let's talk about the financial crisis
sure.
And how that led to where California is at today with this recall campaign.
Sure. Well, the state's broke. There's no question about it. This is the largest deficit in state history. $38 billion, in fact, is larger than the state budgets of every other state except New York. It's an amazing problem. In fact, the state recently had to borrow $11 billion just to pay off a previous loan, which is exactly like getting a credit card loan to pay off another credit card. What happened was the state had a tremendous amount of success during the dot-com era in the late 90s, and the state coffers relied a lot on capital gains taxes. It really boosted tax receipts in California and created this sort of false sense of nirvana. And then the bottom dropped out like it did in the rest of the country, and California got hit harder than any other state. Other states, almost every other state has a major deficit problem. But California is being, the budget situation is being hampered by gridlock in the legislature, where Republicans have said absolutely not to tax increases, unlike Republicans in Nevada and Alabama, and Democrats have said we've cut enough, we can't cut any more. You could close every prison and shut down a lot of the schools, and we'd still have a major deficit problem. You have to raise taxes.
We're talking about the recall campaign, Dow's California Governor Gray Davis, and we are taking your calls at 800-989-TALK. Let's see if we can get a call in here. Jerry in, I believe it's Moor Park,
good morning,
California.
Andrew. How much would a special election cost the citizens of California? We know already that special elections attract only a minority of the registered voters. What minority might be expected to actually vote? And I do have a footnote. In the early 1930s, there was a recall election for the then Los Angeles Mayor Shaw, S-H-A-W, whose administration was considered so corrupt that there was mounted a recall election that elected a man named Fletcher Bowron, B-O-W-R-O-N, who was elected and reelected three times more. And he was a liberal Republican in a Democratic area. In 1948, I believe, a brother of the ousted Mayor Shaw ran for mayor himself with a mocking dog barking and saying, "My name is Fletcher Bow Wow, and I'm a dirty dog." He did not get elected.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, and perhaps, Robert Saladay, you can answer those questions about the cost.
$25 to $40 million, which for a state the size of California, depending on your perspective, it's a lot or it's not a lot. We don't have any experience with this. There have been 31 attempts to get a recall on the ballot. Governor Ronald Reagan faced a recall fight. Governor Pete Wilson, almost every governor since 1911 when the recall was put into place. But none of them have made the ballot, so we really don't know. Obviously, there would be a much smaller cost if it was consolidated on the March ballot, but the figure right now is between $25 and $40 million.
Congressman Issa seemed to dismiss the cost when we were just talking with him a moment ago, but I wonder, what's the sense in the state? Are there some Californians who are saying this is crazy to be doing this at a time when we're already, in the hole by $38 billion? Or is it just, are people just saying, it's not that much more money, let's just go ahead and do it?
No, I've talked to a lot of people who are signing the recall petitions and just talked to people in general. And that, I think Gray Davis is using that argument because it's working. Ordinarily people don't have a conception of government budget numbers. We throw around billions of dollars. $38 billion doesn't mean a lot. When people hear $25 million, it sounds like a lot of money. In the context of the government budget, it's a drop in the bucket. People get angry about different things, so I think the argument could work. The Chronicle wrote a story about a $250,000 catering bill in the state legislature, and people went nuts. $250,000 is not that much money in the scheme of things, especially with a $100 billion state budget, but little things like that do, I think, connect with voters, and I think that's why Davis is using that argument.
Robert Saladay is a political reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. We are talking with him about the recall campaign to oust California Governor Gray Davis, and we're taking your calls at 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about recall elections, how they work, if they're good for democracy or not, and why the effort to recall California Governor Gray Davis is picking up so much steam. Our guest is Robert Saladay, political reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. Join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Robert Saladay, we were talking about the fiscal crisis. What are some of the other things that have led to this recall in California?
Well, I think there was a lot of voter dissatisfaction with government in general and the way Gray Davis handled the energy crisis. California obviously got hammered with its energy deregulation bill in 1996 that sort of kicked into gear around 2000. And Davis, I think a lot of people feel, and I would agree, didn't do a very good job early on of explaining to the public exactly what was going on. I don't think he necessarily understood it, or really anyone did, except power producers in Texas and other states, who genuinely were manipulating power rates to spike prices here. It was a tremendous disaster. On another front, Davis has really been hit. This is sort of parochial, but if you read the state's papers consistently over the last few years, he's really been hit on campaign fundraising issues, whether or not he does favors for campaign contributors. Davis, it really has an extraordinary situation in that over the last two elections, he's faced four multimillionaires, Al Checky, who ran Northwest Airlines, Jane R. Harmon, who's now in Congress, Dick Reardon, the mayor of L.A. and a businessman, and Bill Simon, a financier and the son of the late Treasury Secretary. He went up against these four people who had sort of unlimited wealth. So that's his excuse. He says he's also raised more money than any other state politician in history. And it's created this sort of image where if anywhere you look, any piece of legislation he signs, there's probably a link to some donor. And I think the public may have become weary of reading those stories, or weary of Gray Davis because of it. I think that connected. The funny thing is, he's now facing two more multimillionaires in this recall. Daryl Issa is a multimillionaire. He made his money in car alarms. And then there's a very real possibility that Arnold Schwarzenegger, who obviously made a lot of money in acting and also in real estate, could run on the recall ballot as well.
Yeah, there might be some interesting candidates out there in California.
Yeah.
Joining us now is John Corey. He's a political science professor at California State Polytechnic University in Pomona. Thanks for being on the show, Professor Corey.
Happy to be here.
First of all, can you explain to us how the recall would actually work if it makes it to the ballot? I mean, what does it say? How does it work?
Well,
exactly.
The way it works in California, and it differs in other states, in some other states, but in California, it's a two-part ballot, and the first part is, should Davis be recalled or not? And if a majority say that he should be, then you proceed to the second part of the ballot and vote for one of the candidates, and whoever gets the most votes, even if it's only 15 or 20% of the total, they become the next governor. And Davis is not eligible to be on the second part of that ballot.
So once the signatures are in and it's said that there can be a recall, then people start declaring their candidacy?
Right. And all it takes to become a candidate is a filing fee of $3,500 and 85 signatures. Or if you don't have the $3,500, you can submit a petition with 10,000 signatures, and that'll do it, too.
So potentially there could be a lot of candidates.
Exactly.
And that's one of the concerns, as I understand it, Robert Saladay, that people are expressing, that if there are too many candidates, you're going to have somebody possibly elected by a very small majority, a very, very small number of people.
Yeah, you could literally have a situation where 900,000 people vote to keep Gray Davis, 1 million people vote to oust him, so he's ousted, and then the next governor is elected by 50,000 or 100,000 votes, so that you would have more people saying they like Gray Davis on the same ballot that there's a new governor elected by, just a fraction of those votes. Democrats have recently, just by the way, taken a huge gamble, and that they have decided that the major Democratic elected officials in California have decided to stay off the ballot, from Dianne Feinstein to every constitutional officer in California, attorney general, the treasurer, controller. The state is completely dominated by Democrats. What that does is it makes the ballot look like Davis versus Republicans, Davis versus the right wing, which is how he would like to characterize it. But the risk is that if Davis is recalled, there will be no Democrat to replace him. There will be they will essentially be handing the state over to a Republican.
I mean, do you think Democrats are going to reassess their position if there really is a recall?
I think definitely they'll be doing polling. They'll see what the situation is up to the last minute. The law does allow a fairly wide window for declaring a candidacy, so it's possible at the last minute they could throw someone on. So that's their biggest challenge, is to keep everyone united and off the ballot, because it would just look too terrible for Gray Davis if a voter could go in and say, yeah, get rid of Gray Davis, and hey, I kind of like Dianne Feinstein.
If I could interject just a little bit on this, this is really uncharted waters for everybody, and almost any outcome is at least plausible. We could end up with the first Green Party governor anywhere if Camacho were to run and the Republican vote were to be split among several candidates. So we don't really know what's going to happen.
Let's take a call from Matthew in San Diego. Hi, Matthew.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Yes, I had a question about the legal versus the political aspect of this whole thing. Daryl Issa mentioned earlier that Gray Davis had committed an egregious breach of the public trust, and it seems to me that if such a breach actually occurred, there would be legal grounds for impeaching the government or the governor. But there is no big campaign to impeach the governor. There's simply a campaign to recall. And I wanted to hear a comment from your guests on whether they thought there was, in fact, an egregious breach of the public trust, or whether this was so much political momentum.
All right. Thanks for the call, Matthew. It's an interesting question. I mean, why not impeachment?
Yeah. No, I think that's the exact point actually Gray Davis is making. Daryl Issa and recall supporters say that Davis lied to the public by not stating the full size of the budget deficit before the election. I really wonder if that is in part true. There was some anecdotal information before the election that the deficit would be much, much larger. But is that a reason to recall a governor from office? And I think that's a decision sort of the voters will have to make. But in fact, the recall laws in California don't really mention why a recall should be put in place. In fact, it could be for purely partisan reasons if the backers want it. There's no mechanism for malfeasance. It's just, if you want them out, let's have a recall.
Yeah. And if the Constitution specifically says that while a reason has to be given, any reason will do and can't be challenged. Well, and of course, with impeachment, there does have to be official misconduct, although that's not defined. And it would also require impeachment would require a Democratic legislature to impeach and to remove him from office. So that's not very likely.
There's no suggestion, even among Republican lawmakers in Sacramento, of course among Democrats, that Davis has done anything illegal.
All right, we want to bring in someone who's been through a recall effort, get her to be part of this conversation now, and that's Mayor Barbara Connors of Erie, Colorado. She recently survived a recall effort. Welcome, Mayor Connors.
Oh, thank you.
Tell us about your story. Why did the voters of Erie, Colorado want to recall you?
Well, it actually wasn't the voters of Erie, Colorado. It was a small group of people led by my next-door neighbor. And I think the problem was that I got elected last April 2002, with three other people who felt that Erie was growing too fast and without proper infrastructure to support it, especially schools. And the other side was very, they had been in power for a long time, and they were very surprised that another group of people got elected. And I think they were afraid that somehow, well, they believed their own rhetoric that we were no growth, which is impossible since the old regime approved 9,100 new houses to be built over the next 20 years. So we couldn't be no growth if we wanted to be.
Now, as I understand it, your opponents announced this recall the day after you were elected. Is that right?
Yes. One of the candidates who was defeated gave an interview to the newspaper and the next day and said, well, it doesn't really matter because we're going to recall them anyway.
How is this possible? I mean, doesn't there have to be some charge of, of misconduct in office?
Well, I think he was just announcing that the plan was there. They can't, you can't do it in Colorado until 6 months has gone by. But in October, they were able to get their petitions, but they got 500 signatures in a matter of days. So clearly they'd been lining those up over the six-month period.
You know, I'm interested to hear how this affected the community because, as you just said, it was your next-door neighbor who was instrumental in bringing this recall effort against you. How divisive is it, and how does it ultimately affect the community, this kind of a recall campaign?
You know, in small towns, when there's a major shift in leadership, it's not unusual for this to happen. The unfortunate thing is, as you say, it puts everything on hold for a long period of time. There's a major annexation that the board has to consider, and one of the reasons they wanted to recall us was that they were sure we were going to vote no to it. But we didn't get a chance to vote on it at all because it was put on hold by the developer until the recall was over. So we lost a lot of time on some very important issues.
How did this campaign affect your work as mayor?
I just kept going. You know, I was an American history teacher, so I really believe in people's right to free speech, particularly free political speech. And, you know, the Constitution does give people the right to recall, at least here in the state of Colorado. And so, you know, I didn't feel any resentment, really. I just kept doing what I was doing because I thought that's what I'd been elected to do.
So you think this is a good use of the democratic process?
Well, you know, the thing is, it was meant to be used against people who were malfeasant. And so it was a slight, you know, perversion of that idea. And I think one of the reasons we won with more votes in the recall than we did in the original election was that a lot of people were angry. They thought that the opposition should just let people who were elected do their jobs, and then if they didn't like them, go back to the polls at the normal time.
Are you still speaking to your next-door neighbor?
Actually, I am. Actually, he's just moved to Phoenix, but I did say hello to him a couple of times before he left.
All right. Well, no, thanks.
He was just, you know, he was following his own lights, that's all.
All right, well, thanks so much for joining us today.
Sure, it's a pleasure.
Barbara Connors is the mayor of Erie, Colorado. She spoke to us from her office there. And I just saw, John Corey, just a follow-up for a moment on that. As I understand it, recalls are actually most often used in smaller settings for to recall city council members or school board members, or in this case, a mayor, rather than, as was happening in California, the governor.
That's exactly right. There's only been one governor who's ever been recalled. That was Lynn Frazier of North Dakota, who was recalled in 1921. Governor Davis, if he is recalled, might take comfort in Governor Frazier's experience. The following year, he was elected to the U.S. Senate. Thomas Cronin has estimated that there's been a couple thousand local officials who've been recalled around the country.
And does it seem like a good use of the democratic process to you?
Certainly not the way it works in California. I'm undecided about whether the recall per se is a good idea or a bad idea, but it ought to be not one that is stacked against the incumbent, and it ought to be not be one that allows somebody to win with a fraction of the vote. And there are some other states that do have other ways of doing it that avoid those problems.
We're talking about the California recall campaign, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. If you'd like to join our discussion, give us a call at 1-800-989-8255. And let's take a call from Jim in Sacramento. Hi, Jim.
Hello. The point I wanted to make is that the governor, if this signature campaign is successful, can, in fact, resign, leaving the governorship to his Democratic lieutenant governor, and diffuse this whole thing. I'd like to hear the comments of your panel on a strategy like that.
Okay, thanks for the call, Jim.
All right.
Robert Saladay?
Yeah, we've talked to the Secretary of State here about that. It seems pretty clear under California election law, I'm hedging this a bit because this has, again, not been done, that once the recall is certified and prepared for the ballot, it goes forward. And whether or not Davis is governor or not, he's still technically recalled. You can put that in quotes. And the replacement governor takes his place. If he does resign, which he's absolutely not going to do, I can just tell you from covering Gray Davis for a long time that there's no way he will resign. I just will make that statement right now. But if he does resign and the lieutenant governor takes his place, he would. There's a situation where he would only be governor temporarily until the replacement governor takes over, or if Davis is not recalled, he would just continue. It's very, the law is strange. It's written badly. It's a little unclear on a lot of points, so Secretary of State will have to make a lot of sort of big decisions coming up.
All right, let's see if we can get another call in. We have Ruth in Laramie, Wyoming. Hi, Ruth.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, the reason I called is I'm a lifelong Californian, a Republican. I only moved to Laramie in January because of my health. And so I was there for all the elections in the fall, and I voted against Gray Davis because I'm a conservative and he's not. But I think this recall motion is wrong and is scapegoating him, and that the real problem is that the voters voted in a bunch of bond issues in the billions of dollars when it was well advertised that the budget was struggling. And it's the voters' fault and not Gray Davis.
All right, thanks for that call, and I'd like to hear our guest reply. Is that Robert?
This is Robert. She actually makes a really good point. At the same time, voters are disgusted about the budget situation. On the last California ballot, California voters approved $38 billion or $38 billion in bond measures. $38 billion paid over 30 years, so almost exactly equal to the size of the budget deficit now. They added about $800 million a year in bond payments to pay for schools and other projects on the ballot. So there is a definite disconnect between what the voters are saying at the ballot and what they're saying about the way their government functions. They want to spend, but they also want lower taxes, and they think spending in the legislature is out of control.
And John Corey, just briefly, if we could, to conclude, do recalls usually solve the problems they set out to solve, or do they sometimes make it worse?
Since it's predominantly at the local level, it's really hard to tell. In some cases, it has certainly changed the direction of public policy in a local area. It did in the school district I live in, either for better or for worse, but it certainly changed it and solved the problem from the point of view of those pushing the recall.
Yeah. And what, just one last question, Robert, again briefly. Did Davis underestimate this effort?
I think initially, but now he's fully engaged, and he's got his team working, and they've got two committees set up, and he's fundraising, so he's engaged now.
The fight is on.
He dismissed it at first, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks to both of you for being with us. Robert Saladay is a political reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, and John Corey is a political science professor at California State Polytechnic. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.